Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guest in this episode is paid to see the little moments. He is one of the big names in AFL. I'm going to be a little bit cryptic here, but he's featured in well over 300 games of AFL into his 20th season, in fact. You're probably wondering, which team does he play for? Who is he talking about? How many goals has he kicked? How many possessions, how many Brownlow votes, all of that? Well, he's not a player. He is one of the people that gets lovingly referred to sometimes as a green maggot. But it is true. He is featured now in well over 300 games of AFL and has the incredibly tough job of keeping the game going, keeping it flowing and keeping it fair. Although I have to say, to my guests from the outset, that some of my Frio Docker-loving friends and family would be filthy with me for even giving you the time of day. It's with great pleasure I say hello and welcome to Dean Marquette.
Thank you, Tim. And I certainly say a warm welcome to your family at home. And hopefully by the end of this segment, I'm not trying to be inspiring, but certainly they can say maybe he's not such a bad bloke.
Oh, look, you know, I'm just having a bit of fun. But look, I'm sure nothing I said there is even in the same realm as some of the stuff that gets thrown your way across a boundary fence.
No, certainly, no. It's, as I'm sure we'll go through this a bit later on with some of the stuff that you'll probably read, it does go probably over the fence a little bit too much, but certainly the people that hang over the fence and have a crack on games, I've got no problem with that. I think that's an important part of the game. It's that chemistry, that electricity of what the game's about, and I think we've been very fortunate in Perth over the COVID challenging season, Tim, where you see some games in Melbourne with nothing. It's just that real sterile environment, but we have that atmosphere, and I think the players, and I think, was it Patrick Dangerfield said, we want to play in front of crowds, and you can see and understand why.
Yeah. Having said that, being in your role, having no one in the stands, there must be some part of you that goes, oh, what a dream.
Yeah, it is.
No abuse at all.
I guess the players give you more 360 feedback because you can hear them a bit more. But the players are really good. I think the rapport we've got with them at the moment is probably at an all-time high, and the respect that we have for what they do and what we do is pretty in a really good place.
Yeah. Now, you're calling time on your AFL umpiring career.
Yeah.
Why is that? What's the motivation behind that?
Combination. I guess reading the signs a little bit, from people, in our department, probably always been told that it's always good to go 1 year earlier than 1 year late. And I felt like I was leaving in a pretty good form and in a good place. And it's probably time to invest some extra time because it's such a consuming thing. I've done it for 20 years, Tim, and it's all I've known. My whole life has been mapped around football. When I start to train, when I travel, when I can take holidays, whose weddings I can go to, what parties I can go to or not go to. So I guess to be a normal person for a bit. And I guess we become a bit institutionalised, if that's the right word. It sounds a bit strong. Yeah. I don't really mean it to be that way because it's not. It's been my sport and my passion, but it's all in consuming. And not just for me, it's for my family, my parents, my brother. Like it's Dean Marquette. Are you attached to him? Are you related to him? What's it like? Is he this? Is he that? And I remember my mum won a tipping competition once about 8 years ago. When she won it, and she won it fair and square, it was like, oh, you only won because your son's an umpire. He must have told you he's going to win. And it was almost like this
part
little,
of some conspiracy.
It was like an asterisk against her name. And I felt really sorry for her because we never spoke about it once. She never once said, I heard you. I said, I just don't know. I'm not interested in that sort of stuff. So I felt a bit for her.
You can go anywhere near a tipping competition, even under a false name.
Not
you
under
get
a false
out.
Name, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The scrutiny on the umpire, though, did you ever get used to that over the years? I mean, you mentioned form. It's interesting that you talk about your form. People maybe think of players as noting their form, but not an umpire so much.
Yeah, well, we're certainly we're assessed pretty strongly. All our decisions either are correct, missed, or unwarranted. And the feedback I get over the fence says I miss a lot and I pay a lot of unwarranted. Our bounces, our match management, our communication with players, our interactions, that's all assessed because essentially there's 34 umpires in Australia on the AFL list, Tim, and obviously we want to do a grand final and do the final, so then it gets culled down into 16, into 12, into 6, and into 3. So there is an assessment process, which is pretty rigid. There's no question. A lot of people think that the AFL umpiring department's unaccountable, but I can certainly attest that it's very scrutinised. And there's 27 umpires required every week, and there's also 8 or 9 who don't get to umpire. So they want to umpire, so they need some of us to fall over through form or injury. So we're assessed pretty strongly, and we have to go through a pretty rigorous process through that.
Yeah. Let's go back to your early days, obviously you fell in love with the game.
Yep.
I'm sure you didn't fall in love with the idea of being an umpire.
No, definitely not.
Tell me about your early memories of just loving the game.
Yeah, well, it's clear. It's a long time. It's like 40 years ago, Tim, where I was 7 years of age and my dad took me around to the local footy club, which was Maddington, out in the southern eastern corridor there, and started in the maroon and gold jumper there. My dad was the coach and, you know, your mum would wash your jumper and you have your boots on at 7 o'clock ready to go because you loved it. And I played my whole junior career, met some of my best friends through that. My parents met their friends circle through junior footy. I think that's the strong part of community footy. You meet such good people.
Yep.
I got to about 20 years of age and started playing some senior footy in community where I played about 57 odd league games for Maddington in the Sunday League, which was called then. And then I got to the point where I thought, I love the game, but I just lost the passion for playing. So I coached a junior side for a year, an under-13 side. And a couple of the players, one was Dominic Cassisi, played for Port Adelaide, was the captain. So to have coached a young kid at 13 to then go in time and shake his hand at a coin toss at Adelaide Oval was pretty special for me, and I hope for Dom. Then I did that for a season. That got hard with work, you know, leaving early to go do training and stuff. So then I thought, what else can I do to stay involved? And then I remember I was at my best mate's house in Thornley. The comment news was there and said, umpires wanted. I said, perfect. How hard could it be? Let's do that for a let's do that for a season. Let's see what we can do.
And how hard was it?
It wasn't too bad at juniors because I was just a footy head. I watched the winners. I watched all the shows. So I kind of had that bit of flair, run around and play on and do the holding the ball. So I quite enjoyed that. And then it was just by chance that David Johnson, who was a high-profile waffle umpire back in the day, was the waffle manager. And I umpired his son in a game in 1997, I think it was. And he said, I think you've got something, Dane. I think there's something there we can tap into. I'm going to send you a letter to come down to Waffle. And I thought, as if this guy's going to send me, Dane Maher gets a skinny little runt from Maddington, a Waffle invitation. And to his credit, he did. I joined up in 1998. I did my first league game in 1999. I did the Waffle Grand Final in 2000. And in 2002, I was on the AFL panel. I thought, this has happened in 5 years. That's just so uncommon. And I guess because I started umpiring when I was 22, I was a lot older than most. Most kids start when they're 13 or 14. So I was playing umpiring. A lot of kids see that as that's their sport.
Yeah.
So I was almost learning how to umpire at the AFL. Yeah. So my first couple of years were just like, what am I doing? Well, I shouldn't be here. Am I ready for this? And there was some roller coasters. There's some highs and there's some lows. And to look back on it 20 years to think what I achieved on the umpiring CV, it's a pretty humbling and special experience for me.
Yeah. What was it? What was that thing that he saw in you back then? Did he ever specify?
Yeah, he did. He said it was the way I communicated with players. He goes, it wasn't telling the person who gave away the free kick why he'd done it. It was telling the person who got the free kick why he'd earned it. Mm. And I don't even recall doing it, but he said that was the thing that I thought, if you can speak to players like that at that level, if you can bring that to the next level at Waffle, there's something there. And I was always very fit. I never put on any weight. I've been 75 kilos for as long as I can remember, so I'm very fortunate. So I guess my parents gave me some very durable and resilient genes. And I was able to run, for a long period of time. And, I'm sure we'll go through some kilometres later on. But
some of the stats are impressive. I mean, you've got to be aerobically just a machine, don't you, to do it day in, day out?
I mean, pre-season started in 1 November and you do a bulk of running 3 or 4 times a week just to get to the start of the season in March. And now with AFLW starting in December and the pre-season comps in February, in Perth, as you know, Tim, the weather's pretty extreme, so you've got to battle through that.
Yep.
And then you've got a 23-round series as well.
Yep. At 47, you are the oldest umpire in the ranks there. Mm. Do you have this sort of father figure sort of persona within the ranks, or it is almost avuncular, maybe?
I'm not sure about
that.
Or
is it just straight out competitive?
Yeah, straight out competitive. I never thought of myself as 47. I kind of feel like a 30-year-old. And when you're hanging around 30, you sort of just become one of them. And it's only when I go and pay my license every year, I go, I'm only 74. Oh, okay. It doesn't change, does it? I always had aspirations to be that first 50-year-old umpire. That would have been a great trailblazer, but that hasn't happened and won't happen clearly. But I reflect back on when I started when I was 27. I think that's pretty much footy's been part of my life since I was 7. So for 40 years, I've either been playing, coaching, or umpiring. I've been involved in it, and I'm just still a lover of the game.
And you still love it, obviously.
I do. I love watching games. People say, who do you barrack for? I say, well, I actually used to barrack for Fitzroy when I was a kid growing up. I used to love Bernie Crinlin and Mickey Conlon. I used to love their jumper. Red, blue, and gold emblem there. That was my thing. And then when I became an umpire, you almost become desensitized to teams. You just see free kick, pay free kick. And People have often said I'm the West Coast Eagles' number one ticket holder and all this nonsense, and my wife works at the front desk. And I often said to people, have you actually rung the West Coast reception, asked to speak to her? Because I don't think you're going to find her there, because she just doesn't work there. So all these myths, they perpetuate, and I guess it becomes almost, it's like the Loch Ness Monster. Is it real? Or do we just believe it because we see these like hazy images in the background?
And then look for things that might...
Yeah. And then we grow. And
because
social media is so prevalent now, Tim, and memes can be put on. You can put Dean Margetts' face on an Eagles jumper and put him on top of all this stuff.
Yeah.
People
have a lot of time in their
hands. If you're talking to a player pre-game, they take a photo and they'll say 3 votes, Luke Shuey. If I'm talking to 5, they'll say, it's just relationships,
Yeah. And you must have a thick skin.
Yeah, pretty thick. I reckon towards the last few weeks of my career, the last few games, I reckon it affected me a bit more because I knew I was going, and I thought... there was one game, it was the Freo Brisbane game, where I was out on the boundary line quite a bit. And I remember the crowd almost went quiet and I could almost hear every abusive thing. I could almost sense that was a 10-year-old kid or that was a 40-year-old woman or that was a 60-year-old bloke. I could almost hear their voices. And I thought to myself, is that my subconscious almost checking out or felt like that was time? But then fast forward to the final game, which was a really special day, and then having the Freo faithful sort of almost give me a standing ovation, that was nice. It was almost like that way of saying, we're sorry for 377 games, but this is what you're going to get. So that was nice. I'll take that.
Well, you went out in the high with the Freo fans, didn't you?
I think so,
After many years of being a target for them.
You didn't even
have to give them a dodgy free kick,
I think I'm quite okay. I think I might have had a couple of errors in that game. One was I probably should have paid against West Coast, and one I think I gave to Freo, which I probably shouldn't have. So I had, that's how we get assessed. Mr. Unwarranted. But for me, it wasn't about accountability or stats. It was just about to just soak it up and go, I probably won't be able to stand out here again in front of 50,000 people. And what some people forget also, Tim, is, people like David Mundy and Shannon, I've umpired their whole careers. I see them come on the scene at 17, 18 years of age. And then I went up and shook David Mundy's hand after the game and said, look, well done, mate, you've been a star. And, for what he does for 353 games and the colliding and the collisions and the recovery, you just got to take that off to the players.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
For Josh Kennedy to run after me after the game and shake my hand and say, look, well done, mate, you've been awesome. And I said, well done, you beat me. That sort of banter is, Shannon Hearn came and saw me. He wasn't playing, met me after the game. Richard Gordy came and wished me well before the chairman of the AFL. So to think that I've had that little bit of an impact in Perth from an AFL point of view was really pleasing. And the messages I got, Tim, from around the country, coaches, players, administrators, strangers, it was really humbling.
Pretty special.
It was.
Very good. We need to take a break. After that, I want to ask you about, the game that you were asked to officiate as a 27-year-old compared to now. Massive changes, of course, through the game, which has been, something that footy fans talk endlessly about. But I suppose it's even more important for someone who's actually got to make sense of the rules and apply them to the game, in that moment too, which is, a huge job. We'll get into that right after we take a break. Dean Margetts is our special guest. This is Inspiring Stories. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. My guest in this episode is the one and only Dean Margetts.
I like that.
Yeah, the one and only. And you must turn up to, random parties and that sort of thing, and people go, is that?
Yep.
Is that? And then come up and say all sorts of, I remember round 13.
Yeah, you do.
2002.
Yeah. It's funny. You did this. Yeah, I think my last week where I had a fair bit of media, publicity, I was on TV a fair bit and in the paper. Every time you open up the paper, like, even my kids think, Dad, we're getting sick of seeing you in the paper. but certainly probably the last 5 or 6 years, I've noticed it more where if I'm in a news agency, you can almost sense that's that umpire bloke over there.
Yeah.
And then some people come up and want to have a photo, which is nice. And then some people ask, who do you bear it for? So it has been good. I think people in normal life situations are surprised that when they come up and say hello or can we have a photo or whatnot, that we're just normal people. And like, oh, crikey, I didn't realise you're like that. And I said, well, what did you think we were going to be like?
Exactly.
But you put on the green chest of armour, I suppose, and you turn into this robot who wants to destroy footy.
Exactly.
And I think
this is part of some grand conspiracy to ruin your dreams.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not the agenda at all. I think all umpires are in the game just because they love it so much. And if we can play our role and service it as we're required to do and sit in the background a bit. And we don't ask for the microphones to be put on or we don't ask for the cameras to zoom in, but you know, I mean, sure, Ray Chamberlain, you know, a colleague in Victoria, he gets a fair bit of it. And I mean, he's a personality. He puts himself out there, so he gets his right whack. And I guess for me, I guess I've been that sort of profile face of umpiring in Perth for a long period of time as well. So, but I'm happy to wear that because I think if we can give umpiring a bit of a face and a voice, that's a really good thing for young kids coming through.
Yep. Let's talk about the game as it was when you first entered the AFL ranks 20 seasons ago. It has changed a lot, hasn't it, in the 20 years. Which version of the game do you like better?
I think I preferred the original version where you had, you know, forwards who stayed inside 50, and when the players looked up from the centre and they could kick and there was a person leading out. I think I loved that purist form. I think sometimes today what people don't forget is, you know, inside 50, you could have literally 30 players around the ball.
Yep.
And finding the right position, the right angle is always sometimes difficult. And I think if you're sitting on the other side of the fence, you'll see a different view to what the umpire does.
Yep.
That's why you've seen our positionings move. Then you've got to also give massive kudos to probably Steve Hocking for some of the changes and having the courage to make big calls like 666, stand. I mean, when they got mentioned, people going, what's he done to the game?
Yeah.
But I think in hindsight, look back, those were changes that we probably needed to make the game what it needs to be. Scoring, freeing up the ball. So the person with the ball is the one who dictates the play versus the defensive side. So we always love the high scoring games. And I think we're getting back there. But again, coaches probably find a way to manipulate it back the other way as well. So it's a balancing act, isn't it? It's difficult.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And, you know, moving with the times and making it a more sellable, exciting product.
Correct.
For audiences as well. What about the physical contact that was allowed to happen? Even 20 years ago, and obviously, you know, even more so in decades prior to that.
Yep.
But the level of physicality, and particularly, you know, the
collisions and that,
the bumps, you know, the shirt fronts, all of that sort of stuff from 20 years ago compared to now. There's a lot of stuff, you know.
Huge. I mean, I think the biggest
change. You get rubbed out for multiple games.
Absolutely. Yeah. The things I've noticed, the biggest change, Tim, is probably the dangerous tackle.
Yeah.
Back when I played and back in, they say, 10, 20 years ago, you know, the coach would say, make sure he stays down. Make sure we hurt him so he has to come off. I mean, that now, that just, if you even said that, you'd be in heaps of trouble. So I think we've seen concussion and the head being such an important part of our game. I reckon that's been one massive adjustment for all stakeholders, not just players and coaches, but also viewers watching that. What we used to think was a great tackle is now against the law.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the dangerous tackle, you know, is your head in a vulnerable position? Are your arms pinned? Is there excessive rotation? Do your legs go higher than your hips? So there's all these cues that umpires have to process. And I think 9 times out of 10, when we pay those, I reckon most people say, yeah, that's the right fee to pay.
Yeah.
We want that 13-year-old kid who's going to play on Saturday go, no, I can't tackle like that. Because we want players to be playing. We don't want to be suspended and we don't want to lose a game through injury. I think that's really important. That's tough for umpires. You're asking a 15-year-old kid to then go and umpire like me on the weekend. When he's still learning, there's so many elements, holding the ball, pushing the back, dangerous tackle, 50-metre penalties, protected area. There's so much happening.
What's been the one rule change that people have gotten on your back the most about over the years? Has there been one that people have had a real issue with?
Probably that when they brought the hands in the back in.
Yep.
Remember where you could sort of, you know, hold your ground a bit and then and take them up. Then they said any movement, any contact was just a free kick.
Yeah.
And that lasted for probably 3 or 4 seasons. Then they ruled it right back to say, no, you can hold your ground provided you don't push. So that was probably the one that copped the most traction from a verbal point of view. Yeah.
Yep.
And an adjustment for players as well because you're so used to doing that. And then to say you can't do it, it was difficult for everyone to adjust.
It seemed for a while that they were tinkering for tinkering's sake.
Yeah.
From a fan point of view anyway. Have there been some shockers? From your point of view, do you think?
Shock is probably a tough word, but I'm not employed by the AFL now, so I can probably
exactly.
say that,
you're
I?
Off the leash now.
I've been so programmed for so long. Be me.
Yeah.
Shockers, not sure.
Or just bad calls.
Yeah.
You know, that just haven't maybe served the purpose that they were hoping it would serve. Yeah,
maybe the hands in the back was the one. I think that might be the one. I think that there's been, the last few have been pretty good. I guess you've got to, if we still umpired the same way, because people would say, why don't we just have one umpire? Well, you can't have one umpire. The way the game's played, you couldn't have a one umpire system. You almost need 4 now the way it's played. It's such a 360 game, such the constant movement. But I think the way it's played now, it's such a tactical. I mean, I went to a game, I don't often sit in the crowd, Tim, and watch games because it is difficult because people know who you are. And they're like, well, all that carry on that goes on. But I actually sat there with my hat on with my brother and we watched it from, it was the Melbourne West Coast game where they had to come off for half an hour.
Yeah.
And just sitting up high and watching the chess and the movement and the running patterns of the players because I don't normally see that. I'm on the ground. And and not hearing my microphone of my colleagues in my ear, that was different. I'm like, what's that free kick for? Oh, yeah. I'm not mic'd up anymore. Yeah. So even those watching the game isn't a change and adjustment for me.
Yeah. The cameras now and the scrutiny on so many parts of the ground, you know, off the ball, that must have made your job harder in many ways as well, yeah?
Yeah, it does. Even our review process, you know, you see things, you know, because we have the arc system for our review, so they can flip the camera to the other side of the ground, to the opposite view, and say, why couldn't we have seen that through? I said, well, we can't pay what we can't see. So that's a coaching element for us to use, good and bad. But certainly from a tribunal point of view, I mean, so many things are picked up now like that. It just wouldn't have been picked up, you know, 20 years ago when I started. And 20 years ago, there was no score review. Score review. It's just like goal umpire's call.
Exactly.
And then obviously 10 years ago when that one hit the post in the grand final, St Kilda Geelong, that was clear and we got that wrong. I think they said, oh, we've got to get this right. I still sometimes love the fact that there's humans, players make mistakes, coaches sometimes err, umpires err. The ball is oval. It's not going to bounce perfect. Most of my bounces were pretty good, Tim. I have to say that. But the ball bounces perfect, then Stevie Mill kicks that goal in 2018 and they're a premiership team, aren't they? All of a sudden it goes the other way, they're not.
Yeah.
It's a game of inches, it's a game of seconds, and it's just, that's why footy is footy. It's
yeah.
Beautiful thing.
Talking about bouncing the ball, I mean, that was a controversy in itself for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
To bounce or not to bounce? You're a bouncer.
I'm a bouncer. I'm a massive bouncer. I think we've got the right balance, though, with Tim. Like, we used to bounce around the ground.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had games where I bounced it 35 times.
Yeah.
Whereas now it might be sort of 8 to 12, you know, start of quarters or after goals. And I think that's the right balance. Because someone said to me, why don't you just throw it up? And I said, well, yeah, that would be great. Then you're going to get NBA players coming in just doing tip-offs and it's very sterile and the nuances of body movement and just that not perfect bounce. I mean, as much as we aim for perfection, I mean, everyone's got their own unique style and provided we get it up and the Ruckman get a contest, that's what we want. So I think that's a special part of our game.
Am I right in thinking that that's a bit of a way to compare yourself among the umpires? How good are your bounces?
It is. Yeah. We have our elite bouncers and our guys who can bounce into the clouds and some who
struggle.
A
top level bouncer?
I would like to think so. Yeah. I generally started most of the games I was with because some guys get quite anxious.
Yeah.
And they don't want to start it. And when they're out there, they're fine. But that first bounce is pretty a big thing. I mean, I had the start of the derby here a few weeks ago and, you know, there's 50,000 people. And you know for that split second that everyone's watching you.
Mm.
And when you put it off or it goes out the circle into recall, then it's like, ugh. But when you bounce on straight, that's what people expect. And I guess that's what I expect of myself and all 34 of us would expect the same.
Yeah. We need to take another break. But after that, I really want to get your insights into some of the amazing players and the privileged position, I think, that you had being out in the middle of the field. Privileged to you.
Yeah, no, it was. And on reflection, I look back on something.
It's a unique way to see some unbelievable games of footy and some incredible athletes, you know, doing their thing. So correct. I'm really keen to hear some of your observations on, you know, players and moments that have really stuck in your memory.
Sure.
We'll get into that right after we take a break. This is Inspiring Stories. Dean Maketz is our special guest. Back with more in a sec.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest in this episode is the man in the middle for 20 years of AFL football, Dean Maketz. Dean, you had a really unique perspective of a lot of games of footy, 377 games of footy. You must have seen some things that, you know, that we can't see in the crowd or can't pick up on the TV screens. For you, great players, great moments, things that really stick in your mind. Can you share some of those with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my first game was special, Tim. It was round 5, 2002, West Coast, Brisbane. I'd played the game in my mind every hour leading up to that moment, and I had the ball ready to bounce, and I just took a couple of seconds, looked to my left, and there was Judd, Cousins, and Kerr. Looked to my right, and there was Black, Ackermanis, and Voss, and I just thought, what am I doing with these blokes? It just seems surreal. Then when you look back on their careers, and there's, I think there was, you know, being 4 Brownlow medalists, a couple of runner-up Brownlow medalists in that my first game. So to have those players there, you know, I got to umpire the likes of Nick Riewoldt. I've never seen a person run as much as him. Like, he would almost run 3 or 4 Ks before the game in his warm-up. I'd go out an hour before the game. He's just running laps and doing stuff that no one else could do. You know, Nathan Buckley at his best. You know, Chris Judd bursting through this. And I know Ben Cousins' work rate, you know, just some of his running. Because sometimes as the far umpire, you just get to sit back and go, wow. Copping bumps, copping collisions, which no one sees, to get up and go again and again. James Heard, you know, I was in the game where he got hit by a Freo player front on. I'm not at Subi, probably almost smashed his face. It was like a car accident. I was the umpire there. It was just pretty confronting to see that. Seen some nasty injuries. But, you know, even the modern day players, you know, like those Ollie Wines, the Petrarcas, those strong guys, that they get tackled and they get these handballs out. And how did that even come out? And
and
people sort of don't fully appreciate how good these guys are. And I've been very fortunate enough to even spend a lot of time at West Coast and Freo at their training sessions. And even a stock standard training session, most normal people could not finish. Just wouldn't be able to do it. So my admiration for players and their courage and their fitness is, you know, off the scale.
Yeah. And I know you guys as umpires, maybe one of the things that people don't appreciate, you spend a lot of time outside of games at the clubs, don't you?
Yep.
I mean, working through any rule changes that we've just spoken about.
Yeah.
Just staying in touch, building that rapport, those relationships. How much time would you spend with the clubs outside of games?
Yeah, in the pre-season, a lot. I mean, last year or this season just gone, we spent about 500 club visits around the country. So West Coast, you know, almost once a week, and Freo in the pre-season probably once a fortnight or so, or whenever they want us. You know, if they do match simulation, they'll ask for umpires.
Yeah, okay.
To come down.
So you'd go in there just helping them through a scratch match or something,
rather than coaches coaching umpiring. You know, just that's a free kick, Tim, or that's over there, nat five.
Yeah.
They want the umpires in the full green kit, proper whistles, proper instructions, so they can simulate matches as they would be played in the pre-season comp and obviously that home and away comp. And that's also an opportunity time for us to meet new players. You know, welcome to the club and how you going, and they'll come up and ask questions. What can we do? Can I hold him like this? Can I block his arm? So that education and that respect and rapport that is developed, I think, transcends into the season. So when we know the emotion gets up, but when they come up to you, there's a bit of a pullback because we kind of know each other a bit more.
Yeah. Having said that, you'd have to be very careful, wouldn't you?
Yep.
Not to become mates with those people.
We're not mates. I wouldn't go to David Money's house for a barbecue or go to Shannon Hearn's boat for fishing.
Absolutely. Would you go now?
Nah, well, if they asked me, I'd probably be silly not to say no, wouldn't I? They'd have probably good boats, wouldn't
Maybe
they?
Maybe don't go to, well, unless he wants payback for
exactly.
That time in that game where you robbed him.
But certainly when you're leaving the ground and the players drive past in the car, but they'll wind the window down and say, yeah, well done, Dano. Thanks for that free kick, or yeah, you stiffed me there. So the game's the game between that, say, 2 and 5. But, you know, from 6 o'clock onwards, you know, I think our interactions are really, really positive and engaging, and you get to meet the players' wives and sometimes their kids give you a high five. And I think that's what makes footy footy. You know, we're all in the business because we love it and we've all got our role to play. And I think there's that business side of it, absolutely, but then there's also some time to have a bit of downtime and have some fun.
Did it become easier to have that kind of authority on the field as you got older, as you became sort of older than the oldest player, if you like, on the field?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I started, you probably sometimes over-umpired. I felt like I commentated a bit, probably spoke a bit too much, you know, whereas you get a bit older, you can be a bit more measured, a bit more calm, a bit more composed. And I think the players know you more, you know, and that's not just the local teams. That's, you know, all clubs. Like a Jack Rewald will come up and probably speak to me a lot different to a young umpire he wouldn't even know. So he knows there's a line there. He can push the boundaries a bit, and there's like, okay, that's important. And even in the hubs last year on the Gold Coast, Tim, where, you know, I was staying with clubs like Carlton and Richmond and St Kilda, so you get to meet a whole new range of players, which I don't normally see. So, again, that was an opportunity to develop that sort of rapport with them too, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. How much of an impact did the introduction of the microphones have for you guys?
Yeah, it changed a fair bit.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I mean, I did a game about 12 years ago, and I think Paul Medhurst was playing for Collingwood, and he came up to me real strong and said some things which I couldn't probably repeat on radio. And I just said, Paul, I'm mic'd up, mate. That's not good for your brand. And I think he sort of had to check himself and realise, because when players say things, it probably looks worse for them. You know, they're swearing and kids hear it, or, you know, their mum hears it. It's not great. Mm. But then it is an emotional game, and sometimes you just forget. But I certainly have had to check myself, you know, when it all started, because the little banter is sometimes you got to draw the line. But I remember I swore once when I put a bad bounce off many years ago, and it was a Channel 10 game, I think, on TV, and I bounced it and it went left. I went, you know, I said the F-bomb, and my coach said, just make sure you never say that again, because it came through on the broadcast. So from that moment, I always knew nothing's ever off the record, I guess. Be very careful. Be the pre-game, post-game, because if you leave it on, you know, someone's always listening.
And we know that the footy media loves a talking point.
Loves a story.
Yeah. you must have found yourself at the centre of some of those stories and felt like you'd been fairly unfairly treated.
Yeah, so I think sometimes the headline's the grabber, isn't it? Like, you know, what they write. You know, I remember when I sort of retired that one of the articles was, you know, AFL umpire Dean Maher gets dumped from AFL. So all of a sudden dumped, finally they sacked him when it wasn't quite accurate. So I guess you can, the narrative's there to be interpreted how you want it to be interpreted, I guess. But sometimes unfairly, but sometimes fairly too. Sometimes you got to cop that. I would have loved in my time where after a game, I could go into a press conference and maybe justify a decision or explain, hey, look, I got that one wrong and this is why. I think that would humanise us a bit more. Sometimes we maybe just defend for defending's sake.
Yep.
I've always found with players, the best diffuser of a heated situation is, you know, if you come up to me and said, hey, don't know, was that free kick right? I said, no, I think I might have got that wrong, Tim. What are you going to say? Oh, okay, we move on. But if I want to inflame it, engage it, no one wins from that. So I think sometimes the best diffuser is just sometimes admitting. I remember paying a free kick against Mark Lacroix many years ago where he got his head taken. It's still bouncing down the Hay Street Mall now, I'm sure of it. I was in a derby. Sean McManus took his head off. And he said, Dano, how did you not pay that? And I said, I just didn't see it, mate. I look at the replay and it was clearly a free kick. So the next time I had the chance, I said, Mark, I got that one wrong, but I'm sorry. And he said, yep, no, we move on. So I think that's the important part.
Any others? Think of this as your confessional here for a moment. Confession,
how long we got? look, there's always some that you wish you had. I mean, there's one that was the one that stands out the most because that was just a bad one. but there's lots of 50-50s. Technically, they're frees. If I had my time again, would I have paid it or not? There was one deliberate out of bounds against Matt Rosa in a derby where he taps it straight over. He's the Peel footy manager now. He still to this day reminds me about that. So some players never forget. That's one that I remember. But it's. I mean, how many would I have paid in 20 years? How many free kicks?
Tell me. You're the
hundreds.
You're the numbers,
maybe
man.
Maybe 1,000. Well, we were told that we engage ourselves in about over 2,000 transactions in a game. Free kicks, communication, bounces, signalling. So much stuff happens. So I've been using my hands quite a bit because I'm so used to pointing or calling, holding the ball, Tim. So I need to probably take the Italianness out of myself.
Stick them in your pockets for
exactly.
a while. And we'll get through your stats in a minute. You know, the kilometres that you cover and that sort of thing, because that's phenomenal in itself. And as well, some of the, shall we say, feedback. Spirited feedback.
It is indeed.
You've been good enough to agree to read out some of the barbs that get thrown your way on social media. I mean, absolutely. I'm sure that some of the stuff that comes your way across the fence too is pretty fruity.
It is indeed.
And pretty colourful. But before we get to that, and we'll do that after the break, does it ever get to you? Has there ever been something that's just floored you, either from a player or from a fan, where you've just gone, wow, that actually that cuts me deep?
I had some letters left in my letterbox. Probably 10 years ago, you know, where someone had said, like, you know, we know what car you drive, we know you got two dogs at home, and we know you got two kids, and it got a bit personal. And I thought, when someone's making the effort to come to my house and leave letters in my mum, that was a bit scary, I suppose. Well, not scary, but the fact that people as supporters, now it might have been just a guy up the road thinking he's been funny, but that wasn't our interpretation of it. So I had to ring the AFL up and get the integrity department involved. They put a couple of cameras in my letterbox to see if they catch him, and it stopped. That's probably the nasty one. I've had letters left on my windscreen at times and that, but yeah, that was probably the one moment. I mean, obviously now the social media has just gone to a whole new level because you can be such an anonymous person and there's no accountability for it. And, you know, I just feel sorry for young kids if they have to experience, I'm probably old enough to deal with it, but a young umpire with all the depression and mental health challenges in the community. I mean, those things can sort of tip people over the edge and we don't want that.
That's,
and we want people to be involved in the game, not having experiences where they want to change and leave a sport that they love. And that's my biggest concern. I guess my role as the head of umpires in the Waffle now is to protect people from that and give them skills to be able to handle that stuff so they can take the hits and keep on moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, you've been in the game long enough that you would remember pre-social media.
Yeah.
And the pressures that that's brought to players as well and seeing them in their raw moments out on the field as well. On balance, has it been a good thing or a bad influence in the game, do you think? And for the players who have to endure that sort of...
It's an interesting one because you remember the one that Oscar Allen had on the back of the paper where someone said, oh, I hope you're breaking it. Could you cost me a multi or something? I remember that on the back page.
Yeah.
I read that and I thought, wow, that's tough, but I get that every week.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's an umpire, it's probably just, we're expecting, but because it was a player, whoa, you can't say that to a player. But when you go through some of my stuff, I literally get stuff like that 15 to 20 times a week. That wasn't a back page heading because it's maybe not a sexy story, but they're the things AFL umpires have to process and endure and ride through. And now you park it and you move on because, you know, it's almost sometimes it might feel fictitious, but, you know, when you sometimes just read through and go, gee, that person had to actually consciously find my name, type that in and then go, send.
Yeah.
They're thinking that's appropriate to go send.
Knowing that there's every chance that you will see it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then when you do occasionally respond, you go, thanks for the feedback, really appreciate it. Which free kick are we actually talking about? You know, take the personality. It's like, oh, I had no idea you would even reply.
Oh, it's actually you.
It's you. Oh, my God, I'm really sorry. And I had one lady actually apologise on behalf of her husband because, you know, she was actually embarrassed when I responded back. And I said, look, I can cop it, but if that's another person, that tips them over the edge. Are you comfortable with that? And it, you know, it creates a lot of engagement when you sort of challenge them on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Having said that, we'll get you to go through some of the feedback, if we can call it that, the constructive criticism that you've had to suffer.
I'm not sure there's much construction in there.
No, it's certainly criticism. This is Inspiring Stories. Dean Margetts is our special guest. We'll get into it right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. The retiring Dean Margetts is our special guest in this episode. Dean, just a couple of your key stats here. 481 senior games that you've umpired in. That's 370-odd AFL games, yep. Over 100 waffle games, the 2000 and 2008 waffle grand finals in there as well. One of the more staggering figures is you run on average about 13 Ks in a game. That's a lot of miles on the legs.
That's a lot of miles. I think I've run a few clicks. I've been around the country a few times. Yep, yeah, definitely. No, it's
over a million Ks travelling to and from games.
Yep, a lot.
That's a lot of frequent flyer. How's your frequent flyer points?
Yeah, pretty good. Healthy. My partner takes a fair few when she wants some trips. COVID's probably protected that a bit over the last couple of years. But yeah. I think someone said I've flown around the world 25 times with that 1.2 million Ks.
Is that right?
Yeah, which is a lot.
Yep. Just not that I want to, you know, give any more fuel to conspiracy theories, but your partner's surname is Fife, just for the record. I know you've put it on the record many times, but no relation.
No relation.
No relation.
Scottish background.
Doesn't work at the Eagles.
Doesn't work at the Eagles.
Okay.
Imagine that. Imagine Katrina Fife working at the Eagles. Wow. She would have to change her name.
She would have to change her name. Yeah. Might have to change it to Margetts.
Yes, indeed. I might have time now.
That fitness, though, that's required to, 13 Ks every week.
Yep.
Do you do a lot of training during the week to maintain that level of physical fitness?
Most of the work's done pre-season because our game becomes our biggest training session, 13 Ks. And depending, I could umpire Thursday, Friday, Saturday or Sunday. So that obviously determines when we train and recover.
Yep.
There's probably one hard session during the week, and that might be at a club, mind you, doing some games with them during the week. And that's all assessed and GPS monitored from our national head umpiring this guy. So, it's all well done and measured and we looked after very well.
Yep. Let's talk about some of the fruity abuse that you've received over the year. I mean, you've sent us a sample.
Yep.
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes,
or do you,
please. No, okay. Please.
So this, do you want me to read who it's from?
No.
No. Okay. We'll keep them anonymous. You know, that's very generous of
Even though they put their face in their name to it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
sometimes it's smiling at a family photo.
It's kind of weird. Or there's a guy who's like holding his grandkids on LinkedIn. Seriously? Like, that's weird.
So, look, I apologise in advance. Look, I'll keep this, you know, I'll censor it accordingly as we go, keeping in mind the time of day that we're on air. There might be people listening who don't appreciate it. If we did an IQ test on your knowledge of the game, it would come back with I think it's a potato.
Mm.
Have a good shower with the GWS boys.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. I've never showered with any of the clubs. We have our own change room facility, so that's, I need to clarify that.
Congratulate yourself and the rest of the crew for the insert whatever you want there.
Yep.
Ends with, you know, best.
Yes.
And most biased umpiring I've ever seen. You must get that.
All the time.
All the time.
Yep.
Yep. Mate, you are the most one-sided ump ever. Go back to effing umpiring juniper footy. I presume that means junior footy.
Yep.
I can't even say the next bit because it's offensive to a lot of people.
Yep.
You're so bad. You're the wrong version of your, but we'll blame that on the education system, perhaps. You're so bad and should be ashamed of your efforts tonight. go to Specsavers, you effing blind thing. You legit look like a, I can't even say the rest.
Yeah.
But someone, you know, people who end up in prison for a long period of time for doing unspeakable things to children, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty strong, isn't
it?
That's pretty strong.
And that's, are they text messages to you or are they?
No, they're just sort of like, you know, obviously I've got Facebook and Instagram, so they go, they sit in the request part, you know, where you can, they can find you and you can you can access them. So occasionally I'll just look at it and go, wow, you know, it's interesting. And I keep a few of them. So when I go, I did a talk at the police union a couple of years ago and I shared that with them and just put it up on the screen. And they were horrified that someone doing their job would cop something like that, which I did. So
I mean, outside of this high-pressure environment of footy, is it actually a criminal act these days?
I suppose it could be, but I mean, again,
if someone says you're a cheat or you're, you know, taking bribes from someone, that's defamatory, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. And lots of things get said, and you know, I've read stories, just, you know, it's beggars belief sometimes. But I think those ones you've read out, they're the ones that tip over the edge. There was one that said, you know, next time you're at Optus Stadium, we're going to make sure you get glassed in the car park. I mean, even that's pretty strong, isn't it? I mean, do I have to look over my, now, obviously we looked after with security and that, but, you know, to even think to type that, it's pretty strong.
Yeah. Mm. You won't miss that.
Won't miss that, no. I've got some great memories to keep in the scrapbook to say one day, this is what I used to go through. And I'd love to see in 20 years' time, where's it gone to then? What would it be like in 20 years? I know what it was 20 years ago. Yeah. I know what it's like today. What will it be in, you know, 10 to 20 in, you know, forward? It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. What about from players? Don't name – I know you're not going to name them anyway, let's be honest. But you must have had some filthy things said to you by players as well. Maybe not so much recently now that the microphones are on the ground.
Not filthy, probably more creative. Like, you know, Kane Corns is always very creative. He'd always say, we'd go and meet the player before every game. He'd always say to me, Dana, how many do you owe me this week? Like, you know. Or, some of the smarter players, they're always good because before the game you go and meet the players and you talk to them and they have some banter with you. So, look, I don't think there's been any filthy stuff. No, they've been pretty good.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Who's the best player that you've witnessed from your position on the field?
At the peak of their powers, I'll say Nick Riewoldt. Just his running capacity, his courage. He could do things that sort of not many players his size could do. So he'd be right up there.
Okay. Yeah. As a frequently, consistently outstanding player.
He was the go-to man for his club when their club didn't have a lot of stars. He was the main man. He was the captain of the club, a club which hadn't had a lot of success for a while. So when you package it all up, and you could see what he did. He was right up there for me.
What about the most sort of freakishly mercurial, I can't believe he did that, player?
Probably Chris Judd at his best, when he could just burst through a pack, spin 360, run, bounce, dodge, weave, kick goals. Akimanis on his left foot, he could do things on his left side of his body that no one can do. Buckley, you know, at his best, Heard. I mean, I could list. I got to umpire him, Tim. That's, you know, Jonathan Brown's courage. I mean, his body's just been decimated through courage. And I get to sit. I meant to shake Michael Voss's hand one day, and all his fingers are all munted because of, you know, the handball and all the things. And that's when you sit back and go, wow, our game is such a brutal sport, and these guys are the stars of it. And I've just been really fortunate enough to be able to play a little part in bouncing the ball for them and hopefully getting the right free kicks for them.
And who are you going to support once you'd really sort of deprogram that umpiring out of your system?
Which
team are you going to support?
Depending what colours we wear, it'll either be green, blue or white.
You'll be rooting for the umpires.
I think so. Always have a soft spot because I understand what it's like and how hard it is.
Yeah. And what does the future hold for you?
Time to reset the compass a bit, you know, just invest some time back into people who have probably suffered a bit from my absence, you know, family-wise, friends-wise. Probably have a break and play a bit more golf, mow a few more lawns and, you know, paint a few more walls for the time being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe actually watch some games of footy.
Maybe watch them and just maybe watch them as the game, maybe not with the umpire. Was that free kick right or wrong? Yeah. But I can't go to a game without it and say, don't know, was that a free kick? That might take a while. I'm looking forward to it though.
Well, it's been fascinating hearing your perspective in a very unique position that you've been in now for some time. Congratulations on an incredible career, an enduring career. And boy, I hope some of that, that abuse stops being thrown your way too.
Well, it can start in your household, Tim. That'd be a good start, wouldn't it? But thank you for your having me on the program, and I'm glad I could be a little bit inspiring for some young umpires. Thank you.
I'm sure you've encouraged a few youngsters to pick up the whistle.
Hopefully.
If they maybe don't have what it takes to play footy but want to be a part of the game.
100%.
Absolutely. So thank you so much. You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.